You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Hello and welcome to episode 89 of the Manage Mental Podcast, a weekly discussion on hot topics in the music biz for the up-and-comers, the brand newbies, the beginners, and aspiring rock stars of tomorrow. This podcast is propelled by your input and feedback, so please rate and review and leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this show. I am your host, Mr. Blasco, and as always, I am joined by my good friend, the co-host from the other coast, Mr. Mike Mowry.
What up, Blasco? How's everything in your world? We're hopping here on a big bad Monday, recording the day that this should go out, and just feeling stoked. Got my Ice Nine Kills first week numbers in, and looking like things are even better than expected.
I would be doing jumping jacks and and just, I would be ecstatic, man. I was super stoked to whenever you sent me those numbers, and that's some badass shit. Also, too, I thought since I have people's attention right now as opposed to at the end of the episode, Mike and I have been talking about potentially recording at a place to where we can take callers and have a more interactive podcast. So we might try that out in November and December. So if that seems like something that you guys would be into, what we would do is the podcast would be live, and then we would be able to have the opportunity to take call-ins and guests and stuff of that nature, because it's an actual studio. And then what we would do is we would then edit the episode, and we would have a normal episode that would, you know, be evergreen on the interwebs or whatever. But if people like that idea of doing live episodes and having the ability for you guys to call in, and please email us or tweet at us or whatever, and let us know if that's seems like a good idea. So
hell yeah. Blasco's email for that is askblasco@gmail.com, and hit him up on Twitter or Instagram at Blasco1313. And you guys know you can reach me at Mike O'Loop.
Yep.
So
cool. In the last episode, we took some questions from you, our loyal listeners, as well. So that was a really great episode, so check it out if you haven't already. Today's episode is sponsored by our buddies at rockabilia.com. Go check them out for the awesomest collection of officially licensed band merch on the planet. Use our code PCJabberjaw and get 15% off your entire order.
Hell yeah, those guys are running into the Halloween season like no tomorrow. You've still got a couple weeks left, so head on over there and get all of your holiday wants and wishes for the biggest, baddest time of the season. Rockabilia.com, tell them Blasco and Mike sent you, and use code PCJabberjaw for 15% off of your order.
Today's episode is also sponsored by the cool kids over at BandZoogle.com. where you can build a stunning website for your music in minutes. Try it free for 30 days and be sure to use the promo code MENTAL to get 15% off the first year of your subscription.
Oh yeah, band websites is where it's at, and BandZoogle obviously are the boys and girls that are there to provide that service for you. So head over to BandZoogle. Check out all that they have to offer in terms of hosting and helping you develop a website for your band. Use the code MENTAL, 15% off of your first year subscription.
This week, we talk about digital marketing. This is going to be killer, so let's get mental.
Oh, yeah.
So, Mike, I was trolling around the interwebs, and I found this article that I thought might be cool. It was on a site, Musical.ly. I'm an older dude. I don't know how to pronounce it, but I do know what it is. It's that, you know, it's that web platform where kids can film, you know, themselves lip syncing or singing songs or whatever, but it's very popular, and And apparently a lot of people have gotten record deals from the platform, et cetera, et cetera. I just don't know how to pronounce it. Any ideas?
I do not know. I like watching you or hearing you fumble through the various ones. I was going to call it Music Ally, but
yeah, that seems like that would
but
be.
Musical.ly could be one too. Everybody yeah. out there, why don't you send us the old phonetic pronunciation of whatever you believe it to be.
Yeah. However, I thought it was cool because this is not a site that we pull episodes from ever before. So I thought it was kind of cool. Anyway, the article starts off like this. There are three pillars for music marketing in 2018. What you do with social media, what you do with digital service providers, and what you do with your own platforms, mailing list, most obviously, and direct-to-fan sales, be it on your own site or something like Bandcamp. But what are the trends around these three pillars? Number one, shifting responsibilities between managers and labels. You could present this as a power struggle, but it's more about a division of responsibilities, albeit one that sees more of those duties being taken on by managers, from social media posts and advertising to partnerships with streaming services to making sense of the analytics coming from DSPs and social platforms. Managers are taking on more of the tasks that used to be sole preserve of the labels. So Mike, as a manager / label guy, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the good news for everybody out there listening that is in a developing, you know, artist band and doesn't have a label or might not even have a manager, a lot of these responsibilities are in your hands. And so on our end, yeah, we for years have taken on a heightened role in regards to what a label used to do. We took on a lot of the burden for that. And, you know, to me, really what I, in the best scenarios, and you know, at the top of the show, I talked about having this great first week for Ice Nine Kills. And that's one where, honestly, we did divide up, but it was pretty organically who was going to do what, who had what relationships, who was going to emphasize what parts of the rollout. And everybody worked in harmony. And I think that's one of the testaments to why we had such an amazing, you know, response on this record. So it is true. There are more and more things that are shifting into the hands of, you know, the managers in this case. But really, like I said, managers are merely an extension of the artist themselves. So for those of you out there with either a young developing manager or no manager at all, there's a lot of the things that you can be doing on your own, which I think is really exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, Mike, but for me, I don't really feel that I managed in the era or the genre, but most specifically the era where labels did a lot for the bands. Like, and I'm not dissing, I'm just saying, like, I just think that the era of time that I've been managing bands is there's been a lot of responsibility on the bands and managers as well. And I say that because it's like, there's only so much resources that can come from a record label. The record labels specifically are their staff of people is focused on the release that is in their face. They don't spend 24/7 on the band. And, you know, they're really geared around towards a specific event in time, which is that record release. So, you know, the other 11 months out of the year isn't really their concern for your specific band. So I feel like that since I've been in the game, that managers have taken on a pretty significant responsibility. And I've only seen infrastructure of labels only decrease, right? Like getting rid of art departments, getting rid of PR departments, getting rid of marketing departments, and just, you know, either hiring them out for a release or whatever, right? So like, I feel like I've always taken on that extra responsibility, but now it's increasingly more and more. If anything, if I had a wish, I just, in terms of like digital, the digital side of things, like I wish more bands were fluent in the language of social media and like could just do more. Like, I don't mind doing it. But I just wish that band, like as we progress into this digital era, I wish more bands were taking on the responsibility of really developing an online presence and personality on their social media.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it is a little challenging to do, and I think it can be intimidating for a lot of artists. And one of the things that I've seen at the best labels is even if they aren't doing that themselves, meaning developing the band's personality for them, which really would be impossible, they're giving some guidelines and they're helping the band stick to a schedule. Or we as managers do that as well, as you know firsthand. So, I mean, I think the overall bit is, yes, there's a lot out there to do. I mean, in some senses, it can be very overwhelming. You do need to have a strategic approach to it and understand that no one is going to do it for you. Really, the bands and their teams have to be the ones leading the charge. And if your label can help you out with that, fantastic. And if not, there's no use in crying over spilled milk. Just get out there and do the work yourself.
Number two, YouTube throwing its weight behind artist marketing. There's the launch of YouTube Music, its on-demand subscription service. And there's also YouTube's production of original video with artists. Meanwhile, labels and artists have continued to explore the marketing potential of YouTube with their own content, music videos, but also more. Any thoughts there, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, you know, YouTube is, to me, it doesn't seem, I don't know. I mean, I haven't watched it increase necessarily. I've watched it actually go from, you know, 5+ years ago when it was sort of the be all end all. You'd either put up a professionally produced music video, a lyric video or something like that, and you just watched the counts. And that was really the measure that people looked to. You know, since Facebook and Google, since they're owned by, you know, separate companies, you know, and their algorithms really started diminishing the YouTube, you know, direct links on Facebook, which really seemed to be the key place for people, you know, for artists to promote their stuff. That number seemed to go down. And now it really seems as if Spotify is the, you know, nom du jour that everyone is talking about what your numbers are there. But YouTube and video content still play a vital role in an artist's career. So to me, it's a little bit mixed. What about you?
The advantage of what YouTube is doing is they have places around the world called YouTube Space. And so here's the reason why you need to get behind YouTube, and a focus should be on video content and building up your subscriber base. Because when your subscriber base reaches certain thresholds, then you get X amount of time available to you for free at YouTube Space, as long as you book it enough time in advance. And there's parameters of, you know, what it is, like whenever you have 500,000 followers versus 1 million followers, et cetera, et cetera. But that is highly advantageous. If you can use a huge production facility for 7 days for free, that should be a high level of motivation for you to want to build your subscriber base on YouTube at any cost. Like, don't let it be something where it's just like, oh, well, we just put out a video whenever we have a budget. No, like, do something creative. Make a TV show, film behind the scenes, film, you know, tour videos and stuff, and put them up on a consistent basis. Understand that content is king and YouTube is very powerful, and they actually give you something in return for your hard work.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it goes back to the age-old saying that I haven't dug out in a while, which is, you know, great content done consistently over time. So if you've got, you know, if you've got the numbers, or even if you don't, as you're building, creating that content and trying to make it as good, if not great, as possible, that really is a key to growth, as we've seen.
For sure. Number three, labels are bringing advertising in-house. We talked in point one about managers taking on some of the digital marketing duties previously performed by labels, but labels are also taking on new responsibilities. For example, bringing their digital advertising and media buying in-house rather than relying on external agencies to handle it for them. Control of the data is a key part of this. Owning the data and being able to use it for retargeting campaigns rather than having to keep going back to an agency and paying essentially for access to your own artist fans. The tools are available to make this possible for a label, and a growing number are ensuring that they have the human skills in-house to make use of them.
Yeah, this is actually, you know, I saw this again on the Ice Nine Kills release that we just did. You know, their label Fearless really did a lot of this stuff that I hadn't seen a label do in quite some time on a release. Most of the stuff had been outsourced. I think when, you know, as the spends on advertising have really shifted from anything print related over to the digital space, and really not just digital, because the older, you know, the ads on blogs and the ads, you know, I'm trying to think of what the specific name is for those types of ads. That's different than a lot of what's happening now, which is really the ads on the social media platforms, as well as, you know, YouTube, having those outbound ads. It's a little bit of a difference between what, and that's what labels were hiring out for in the most recent of times, or at least as far as my experience has been. What about yours?
Yeah, this is encouraging to me because I feel like this is a sign that labels are now starting to pay attention. Digital is starting to be a significant amount of revenue source for the labels, and they're putting money into the process. Yeah, can we get rid of an art department because it's not necessary, and can we just hire that out? Absolutely. But the fact of the matter is that as they get rid of one thing, they're bringing in something else that is going to be significantly useful. And I think this is really encouraging, in my personal opinion, to have in-house people that are focused on advertising, because you got to figure, people, like, look, you know, to promote a record, it costs money, and it costs money in advertising and marketing. That all costs money. But, you know, now it's like it's all in a digital space. So to have people in-house that are seeing where the money is going, to analyze where spending money gets results versus we're just throwing money out the window for a couple of, you know, clicks or whatever, right? Like it's super positive that they're putting money back into this, hiring resources that are in-house, that are in control of the analytics. That way, whenever it comes time for you to put a record out in the digital age, they're like, you know what? We're going to do X, Y, and Z because that worked for these artists. And we know that spending money in these places didn't work. So like putting money in the right places to get the best results. I think this is super positive.
Absolutely.
Number four, augmented reality offers playful potential for artists. A couple of years ago, there was a lot of buzz around virtual reality as the next big thing for immersive music content. Yet now there's a sense that it's augmented reality that offers more opportunity for playful, creative artist marketing on platforms that count their users in the hundreds of millions. Artists and labels are exploring how augmented reality can engage fans and drive sales and streams in the process.
I can't say that I really have much experience with augmented reality. I do know, you know, I've spent a little bit of time with the VR space and I'm really excited about that. And I understand the concept of augmented reality and hope that it is something that, you know, the artists that I work with, we do more of in the future. What about yourself?
Hey, look, man, at a day when augmented reality drives sales and streams, I'm just concerned about streaming driving sales and streams at this point. You know what I mean? Like, we'll get to virtual reality and we'll get to augmented reality first, but let's get over the hump of people not buying CDs and because they're not going to be available for much longer, and get them into the streaming space. Like, let's focus on that happening first before we worry about people walking around with fucking Google goggles on.
Nah, I hear you. I mean, it's a very good point. I think the other part is, you know, people are immersed in, you know, Snapchat and Instagram stories and things with filters and all of that. And how can you get creative? And, you know, this is just what we've seen. I mean, it's all now in the digital space, which really at this point means it's on our freaking phones. And so the more that people can do in the creative, to be creative in that space, which might catch someone's attention, not with the sole purpose of driving somebody to stream music, but you know, you see something creative, you see something really interesting, and you know, you hear a component of an artist's song, and that's what gets you to go to check out the album in the streaming capacity. I'm all aboard. I know it just will take a little bit to actually get us there.
Final number five. Flexibility is everything in the modern music marketing campaign. How long is the average music marketing campaign? How is budget apportioned to it? The answer to both questions is it depends, and what it often depends on are events during the campaign itself that can be anticipated and prepared for, but never guaranteed. Songs can suddenly spike on one or more streaming services despite not being the intended single. An artist can do something on their own that makes waves of the positive or negative kind. Opportunities can arise for quick fire partnerships or pieces of content that weren't planned for at the outset. Fast decisions and flexible strategies are key to all of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really long-winded way of saying, you know, we've got real-time feedback, and the best campaigns are the ones that are able to sort of pivot or at least get, you know, change a bit of their strategy. So if you think that 90%, or maybe that's too big of a number, if you think that, you know, 60% of your money should be going into one thing, like let's say you identify a target audience, you know, you take 20 bands that, you know, all are different range of sizes, and, you know, you think that pouring your money into them on a particular platform is what's going to lead you the best results. And within a short amount of time, you see that it's not giving you the return that you had hoped. Being able to change that up and get flexible is really the key. And it's really nice because, you know, it can cause a little bit more chaos. But, you know, the old school method was, all right, you knew where to take out your print ads. You knew how to do certain things to get your records on stores and shelves or end caps, if you remember those at various record stores. Now it really is a time where you can take what you're getting in terms of real-time data and reappropriate it, reappropriate your resources to a way that can be more effective than, you know, you originally had anticipated.
Yeah, to me, the last sentence kind of says it all. Fast decisions and flexible strategies are key. And I agree, because it's like in this day and age, you know, there's only so much that you can do in terms of meticulously planning out of like, we're going to put this graphic on this day, and then this is going to come out on this day. And like, that's all fine. But the reality is that we're living in a more fast-paced, fast food content digestible world, right? So it's like it seems like the majority of stuff, even though there's a plan, like the release day is this day, like that's locked in, and you know, there's certain things that are going to be leading up to that, a lot of the content is really kind of based on how the flow of the campaign is going and what's working. Like, is a live clip working better than a graphic, and are the algorithms eating up, you know, the visibility, and what click through rates are we getting, and you know what I mean, what advertising is working best. I mean, there's so much that now, that because there's so much access to analytics, that we have to kind of ebb and flow with what is being digested and engaged with from the fan base. So to me, yes, flexibility is like crucial in the digital age.
Hell yeah.
That's right. And that will conclude episode 89. Thank you for tuning in. We will be back here next week. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Lasco1313. We encourage you to email us any questions or comments you may have for the podcast to me directly at asklasco@gmail.com. If you have listened thus far, much respect to you for making efforts to educate yourselves and taking your future into your own hands. Mike, any final parting thoughts?
You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mike O'Loop. Head to OuterLoopCoaching.com for a comprehensive overview of the courses that we have that cover certain things like how to market a record, how to release a record, any number of those things. And just want to say thanks to all of you out there listening. Continue to give us feedback and don't forget to support those who support us, both Rockabilia.com with the code PCJabberJaw for 15% off, as well as bandzoogle.com with the code MENTAL for 15% off of the places to go. Tell them Blasco and Mike sent you, and we'll see you or hear you again next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Peace.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.